Let's talk about the qualification for elders, the qualification of being the husband of one wife. When you look in the scriptures, you discover that it is a qualification that is mentioned for elders in 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 2, for deacons in 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 12, and again for elders in Titus chapter 1 and verse 6. I cannot underscore how important this issue is for leadership in the church today. It is probably one of the most critical and pressing issues that the church faces, especially with the rampant amount of divorces that are taking place and the questions that that raises so far as church leadership is concerned. Technically, the expression is really one woman man. The husband of one wife is a translation of the Greek words which simply say a one woman man. The question is, what does that mean? A.T. Robertson, who is a great Greek scholar, thinks the answer is obvious. He says it means one at a time, obviously. Well, it certainly would include that, but that is, in my opinion, setting the bar at the lowest possible level. One at a time seems to imply there may be a sequence of them, but as long as they get in line, what's the problem? The second way of looking at that is one wife in a lifetime. And that is certainly a view that needs to have some consideration. That would mean, if we take it that way, that it would be one wife whether a man was widowed by the death of his wife or if he was divorced. Still, it would mean one wife in a lifetime. I have known of circumstances where men have resigned as elder because their wife died and they remarried, and that was their position and they stuck to it, so to speak. But when you look at 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 9, you find the parallel expression, which I think has to be taken into consideration. In 1 Timothy chapter 5, Paul is speaking about widows, and he is speaking about those widows which should be put on the list, that is, those who should be supported by the church in some regular and consistent way. Listen to what he says in verse 9 of 1 Timothy chapter 5. Let a widow be put on the list only if she is not less than 60 years old, having been the wife of one man. So the expression there is a one-man woman, which you would have to understand, I think, in a similar way to the expression a one-woman man. If you think about this situation, the inference is that this widow has been married once, her husband has died, and she has chosen to remain single. She literally has had one man in her lifetime. When you look at Anna in Luke chapter 2, you remember here is a woman who was a widow for many years, and it says that she had been married to her husband for 7. So she was married, her husband died, and for all those remaining years, she remained a widow. So those who would take one woman in a lifetime certainly at least have a fair bit of precedent to find in the scriptures. But I'd like to suggest that the standard is even higher than that. Because the problem is, a man could remain married to one wife, but fail, I think, in his fidelity to her in many ways. In his thought life, in his relationship with other women, in flirtation, in many different ways. And remember, our Lord Jesus says that adultery can be committed in the sins of the mind as well as merely the sins of the body. So I think you have to raise the standard higher than merely having one wife in a lifetime. And I would suggest to you that a one-woman man is a man who is characterized by devotion to his wife all of his lifetime. And that goes beyond merely staying married. It's talking about his love, his devotion, his thought life, his purity in relationships with other women, that fidelity is there. I see also, when you look at the book of Ephesians chapter 5, that marriage is a picture of Christ and his relationship to the church. Therefore, a man's relationship to his wife is a picture of the relationship of Christ to the church. And I see Christ saying, I will never leave you nor forsake you. If man is to manifest the relationship of Christ to his church through his marriage to his wife, then surely the standard for that marriage must be exceedingly high. And indeed, I believe that it is. When you think about an elder in a church, his personal characteristics and his personal qualifications in many ways set the standard for the church. If a man does not remain faithful to his wife and yet he remains in leadership, there is the inference that everyone gains that somehow that now becomes the standard for the rest of the church. So whatever standard you set for the elder is in fact the standard you set by example for the church, and that of course is very important. I want to focus on two very critical texts which I think will put this in perspective. In Matthew chapter 5, beginning at verse 27, our Lord Jesus speaks about the sin of adultery. And I want you to listen to what he says. You have heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery. But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart. So he goes from the literal act to adultery of the heart, but now look at the degree to which he recommends the corrective action must go. If your right eye makes you stumble, tear it out and throw it from you. For it is better for you to lose one of the parts of your body than for your whole body to thrown into hell. If your right hand makes you stumble, cut it off and throw it from you. For it's better for you to lose one of the parts of your body than for your whole body to go into hell. It was said, whoever sends his wife away, let him give her a certificate of divorce. But I say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for the reason of unchastity makes her commit adultery, and whoever marries a divorced woman commits adultery. Would you not agree with me that Jesus is saying you ought to go to radical extremes to deal with the sin of adultery? Being morally pure is so important, you ought to be willing to do the radical thing. Will cutting off an arm or plucking out an eye prevent adultery? No. But what Jesus is saying is, that's how serious this sin is, and that's how seriously you should take dealing with your life so that it is not committed. A second text is found in Matthew chapter 19, beginning at verse 9. Actually, it begins earlier in that chapter. You remember the question was raised, can a man divorce his wife for any reason whatever? Within Judaism, there was a conservative view and there was a liberal view. The liberal view would have said yes for whatever reason. But Jesus takes everyone by shock, including his disciples, when he says this, and I say to you, whoever divorces his wife except for immorality and marries another woman commits adultery. The disciples said to him, if the relationship of a man and his wife is like this, it's better not to marry. If you have to stay married all your life and you can't get out, maybe you shouldn't get in. Jesus could have said, oh, you've misunderstood. I didn't mean to be taken that seriously. Instead, he says this. But he said to them, not all men can accept this statement, but only those to whom it has been given. For there are eunuchs who were born that way from their mother's womb, and there are eunuchs who were made eunuchs by men, and there are also eunuchs who made themselves eunuch for the sake of the kingdom of heaven. He who is able to accept this, let him accept it. Jesus is saying in the strongest possible words, avoid adultery at all costs. That's pretty serious talk. And it seems to me that we need to come away from this with a couple of thoughts by way of application. One, the standard we set for elders is the standard we set for the whole church. Whatever standard we set for elders in this area is a standard that everyone in the church will think applies to them as well. It's very obvious. Jesus sets the standard higher than anybody in his day. His disciples were shocked at what he had to say, and Jesus did not back off of that high standard. Liberals, conservatives, nobody saw the permanence of marriage more serious than our Lord Jesus did. There's a third area that I think we have to keep in mind. This is a standard which must be met in order to become an elder. But surely it is also a standard that must be maintained in order to stay an elder. This is not a standard one passes by and never thinks of again. It is one that gains you entrance into a great office of responsibility. And it also is one that ought to give you sobering thoughts about maintaining your marriage in a way that glorifies God.